African community. And as we've just heard by Martin this morning, East African community is comprised of Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi. And my paper is based on a research in Tarime District, which is a border region between Kenya and Tanzania. And what I wanted to do in my research is to see which effect does regional integration under the East African community have on informal cross-border traders. And hereby, I interviewed several traders, large-scale and small-scale traders. And for this paper, I unfortunately had to limit, and I focused on small-scale traders now and their reaction to regional integration under the East African community and the reason for them to engage in informal cross-border trade despite trade liberalization in the East African community. My main arguments are that even though East African community integration seems sophisticated and deep, it is hardly a reality within East Africa's borders. And in the end, there's a huge gap between integration on paper and what is really behind regional integration when you go to border towns, for example. What I found is that small-scale actors and informal actors especially are largely left out, which is also the reason for them to remain informal. And in the end, I found that this makes the East African community rather an isolated body, and local informal actors are rather standing in opposition to East African community integration. And thus, also to catch up with the debate we had this morning, I think it is indispensable to focus on empirical and also historical dimensions of regional integration in Africa in order to fully understand it, and also in order to understand why it might not be implemented in certain areas or certain regional organizations. Okay, the East African community. I chose the East African community mainly because it's very often described as a success of regional integration in Africa. This was also mentioned in your paper, I think, Martin. And whenever scholars outline that the East African community is a very positive example, they refer to its very sophisticated institutional structure, which is also inspired by the EU, and also its long history of cooperation. And the indicators for a success of the East African community are hereby often rising formal trade figures and disappearing informal trade shares. And yeah, in the following I will just outline my argumentation further. The East African community indeed has a very long history of regional cooperation, and it was first institutionalized by the British colonial government in 1917. When Kenya and Uganda were integrated into a customs union and Tanzania joined further. And all this just shortly led to the establishment of the first East African community in 1967, but the first East African community was dissoluted in 1977, largely because Uganda and Tanzania feared industrial competition by Kenya. In the end, from 1993 on, there was a reapproachment, and the East African community was revived again in 1999. Oops. Okay, and to this end, the East African community formed a customs union in 2005 and a common market in 2010. And the key features of this trade liberalization are the gradual elimination of internal tariffs. So when goods are produced within the East African community, they can cross the East African community's borders or the internal borders without paying any tariffs. And this is ensured by rules of origin. This is an instrument from international trade which ascertains the origin of a good. So traders need to get the respective documents to show that their goods are produced in the East African community. And what the East African community did for small-scale traders is they established simplified rules of origin for a value below $500. This very is important for small-scale traders because they could just get these documents at the border and then cross the border without paying any tariffs. Furthermore, the East African community harmonized customs procedures and eliminated non-tariff barriers. And under the common market, we also have free movement of persons, labor, services, and capital. And also the ESC's institutional structure is very sophisticated, and what is important is that the ESC Secretariat is the only permanent and independent executive ESC organ on a regional level with a set quarters in Arusha in Tanzania. And so we just saw that the EAC was very active in trade and market integration. They have a customs union and a common market nowadays. And with this deepened market integration, actually informal cross-border trade should have vanished, because in theory it should be possible now for traders to cross the border without paying any tariffs. And this is also the main rationale behind these, behind trade integration, let's say, that trade within the region is enhanced, and this is possible because barriers to trade are abolished. Informal cross-border trade, just to define the term, is trade across the border that is deliberately concealed from official detection. So in colloquial terms, we could also call it smuggling, but it's illegal goods. And yeah, the East African community itself was very ambitious and stated that the market had done away with 400 panya routes, which existed across Kenya-Tanzania border prior to the assignment of the common market agreement. Panya routes, panya is rat in Kiswahili, and the panya routes is the colloquial name for the smuggler routes. And so now the East African community stated, also on their webpage, that informal trade routes disappeared and informal traders switched to formal trade channels. And this was the rationale behind my research, to see whether this is really true and informal cross-border traders really changed to formal trade channels. So in the end, this allows an approximation to the actual status of regional integration in the East African community. And what I found when I was in Tadima district is that informal cross-border trade is rampant. There's a lot of informal trade on a small scale and also on larger scales. On small scales, we mainly have low-quality manufactured goods which come from Kenya into Tanzania, like, for example, soap or sweets, cooking oil, also cosmetics. And they are transported individually, but also via bicycle carriers, for example. If you want to have detailed examples, you can also have a look at my paper for this. And on the other hand, there's a lot of large-scale trade where, like, convoys of trucks pass the border during the day and also at night, mainly in grains, for example, maize from Tanzania to Kenya. And from Kenya to Tanzania, we have a lot of construction material, like metal or cement and all these things. And by paradox, most of these goods are produced in the EAC, and if traders would have the right documents, they could cross the border without paying any tariffs. So this is a picture, for example, from the border, the Kenyan side, and here exactly the goods are sold that are used for informal cross-border trade. It means that traders from Tarime District can easily cross the border, buy all these goods at the border, and then return to Tarime District using these informal trade routes. And on the other hand, for large-scale trade, there are whole villages which are just full of stores, for example. So all these buildings you see here are stores. And trucks from both countries meet in the middle of nowhere, basically, and exchange the goods there in these stores. And as I focus on small-scale traders now, I mean, we can further discuss about large-scale trade later. What I found is that the incentives for them to rely on informal trade are that traders first just didn't know about the reduction of the East African Community tariffs. Some of them didn't even know about the East African community as such. And all of the traders I interviewed said they never passed through official customs channels. And they just heard through a referral by other traders, for example, that it's very disadvantageous to use official channels. So none of them ever tried it. And when they were asked if they wouldn't want to try it, they stated, no, they are afraid, because if you pass through customs once and you are rejected, then you would have to pay every time you pass through the border, and the customs officials might know that you are a trader. So they continue to rely on these informal trade channels because they just don't know and are not adequately educated also about the East African community. So what I found is that for the reasons for small-scale traders to rely on informal trade channels, it's a mixture of the evasion of trade barriers, which are still there in the East African community, even though on paper trade integration looks different. Then we have a lack of education, as I just explained, and also elements of pervasive state support. So to further explain these factors, there are still tariff and non-tariff barriers in the East African community that were not abolished. Means that even though the East African community calls itself a customs union on our common market, there are still several domestic and local taxes, for example, which traders have to pay for their goods. And what I also found very interesting is that traders, basically they didn't use the simplified rules of origin documents, which they should be able to apply for at the border. And this is why if they come to the border without these documents, they actually have to pay the full common external tariff rates. So for them, it would be indeed very, very costly because most goods traded informally within the East African community have very high common external tariff rates. And the traders didn't know that there's a possibility to apply for simplified rules of origin documents at the border. And what was actually very sad is that also customs officials were not aware of this possibility. The scheme was already started in 2005, but still customs officials stated that it's not possible for small traders to apply for tariff remission. So they would indeed have to pay a lot. What is more, customs officials increase their wages through bribery, mainly, because they don't educate traders on their rights, and then they wait on these smuggler routes, for example, and take bribes or take money. And for the traders, it's even like they even feel like it's a good thing for them to pay bribes because it allows them to continue their business. What would be needed in the East African community is to integrate small traders into the East African community, and there are workshops, but these workshops to educate traders, they are very rare and they are very technical. I also participated in one of these workshops myself, and I think for traders who just sit there and listen to terms like the common market or something like that, for them it's very hard to understand what's behind this abstract concept of common market. So for small traders, as these few examples just showed, it's indeed very rational to use the panya routes, the informal trade routes, and pay bribes. Even though, as also De Soto outlines, for traders, informality is not the best of all possible worlds because informal traders are very vulnerable. They don't have any rights, they don't have any, or they rarely have possibilities to expand their business, for example. And they have to use a lot of mechanisms to avoid fraud and breach of contract, for example. So what I suggest is that in the case of the East African community, the informal cross-border trade is an ultimate result of an inadequate institutional structure of the East African community that prevents information dissemination and also trade liberalization within the bloc. And as a result, trade integration does not really get to the ground in the East African community, and East African community integration on paper looks very much different from its reality for traders, for example. And this is largely a result of the institutional structure, because the East African Community Secretariat, for example, even though it's the financial and administrative manager of the East African community, doesn't have any authorities to initiate, monitor, and evaluate policies and programs, for example. So even if the East African Community Secretariat considers a certain step necessary, it has to rely on the accomplishment by the member states. And within the member states, it's the National Customs Administration or the Ministries of East African Community Affairs who should implement directives or suggestions, let's say, by the East African Community Secretariat. But in the end, these institutions don't implement, for example, traders' workshops or even even tariff remissions at borders or education for customs officials. And I think this is largely a result because the ministries of East African Affairs, for example, as I found out, they are understaffed, they lack resources and competences, and for themselves, they rather have the self-conception of being a coordination point. There are apparently no government priorities, and thus information is not delivered from the East African Community Secretariat to the ministries to the ground. So, okay, in the end, as I already said, East African community integration is very much different on paper than in reality, and it's hampered by a lack of political will by the member states' government. And just to make it short and make it round again to connect it to this morning's debate, I think this also could be a result of the EAC's historical legacy, because the first East African community was dissoluted in 1977, also because Kenya and Uganda were afraid of industrial competition. And this is something which is very present also nowadays, that the Ugandan government, for example, or also Tanzania, they are reluctant to fully liberalize trade, for example, because they are afraid that their market will be, too many goods from Kenya would come into their markets and make local production more difficult, for example. And this is why, also as I found out, that, for example, local taxes or domestic taxes, the rate has even did even rise in comparison to the period before internal import tariffs were there. Because nowadays, the countries try to protect themselves through these domestic and local taxes, for example. And they're paying the lip service and saying that they liberalized trade and abolished import tariffs, but in the end, they are finding different mechanisms to protect themselves from competition from Kenya. Okay, and just to conclude, in a nutshell, as a consequence of all this, there continues to be an army of informal traders who, with their attitude, stand rather antipodal to formal regional integration in the East African community. This is also an important argument. I don't want to go too deep into this argument because I want to focus on regional integration now in this presentation. But I think that the traders I talk to, they are rather in opposition to the East African community because they consider it a bluff or only existing on paper and only beneficial for large traders, for example. And they feel left out, and yeah, this is why I conclude that they are rather antipodal to formal regional integration. And I think that's it. Thank you.